This is the Home and Overseas Service of the BBC. Ladies and gentlemen, the Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Clement R. Attlee.
I have no easy words for you tonight, nor, as you may have read in the press, must you expect high phrases or eloquence. But I want to hold your interest and to stir your imagination. And this is best done by simple and straightforward words. Listen with me to the end and think and talk over what I have said afterwards. I have a heavy responsibility upon me, but you have too. You all know the serious economic position of our country and the drastic steps which the government is taking to overcome our difficulties. The measures which we are taking will affect everybody: wage earners, managers, technicians, producers and consumers alike. The problem that faces us can only be solved if everyone shares in the sacrifices necessary and joins in the work required for success. For this reason, I want to tell you simply what the position is, why it has come about, and what we must do to win through. Ever since the population of this little island grew large, trade has been its livelihood. We imported food and raw materials and paid for them by exports of coal and manufactures, by earnings from shipping and other services, and by interest on foreign investments. The First World War injured our position seriously. The Second had far worse effects. When we stood alone in the Second World War, we threw all that we had into the battle. Not only did we stake the strength and courage of our people, but also our material resources. We sold our foreign assets. We reduced our production of civilian goods to a minimum. We lost nearly all our export trade and much of our shipping. When the United States entered the war, we pooled our resources, and the generous provision of lease lend kept us supplied with essentials and enabled the war to be won. When the war ended, lease lend stopped. We had to start our national life anew, knowing that in the future we must rely entirely on our own resources and work to provide our standard of life. To do this, a plan was required to suit our new conditions, and this was put in hand by the new government, returned to power on a definite program. We had to secure the great basic industries on which our economic life depended. Coal and electricity, steel and transport, were put into a fit condition to serve the country. The agricultural industry had to be given security so as to produce all the food our land could bear. And we had to produce more goods for export so that we could pay for what we required from abroad. But we started with a heavy handicap. Houses and factories had been destroyed by blitz. Much of our equipment had been run down. Our stocks of goods, as you all know from personal experience, needed renewal. Our industry had been turned to war purposes. Great numbers of our workers were in the armed forces, and we had heavy commitments overseas, which we could not avoid if we had to play our part with our allies in dealing with the settlement of the world. We needed time to recover. To gain this time, we borrowed from the United States and Canada dollars which would, we hoped, carry us through at least till 1949. But whether these loans would give us enough time depended on a number of factors outside our own control. A good beginning was made. The immediate tasks of getting the men and women out of the forces and back into industry, and of turning over our industries from war to peace production, were done with very little friction. A great deal of reconstruction and repair was carried out. The immense work of providing permanent and temporary houses for the people was begun. Great measures of social security were passed into law, and the reorganization of our basic industries was taken in hand. Above all, we made a great increase in our export trade. The volume of exports in 1946 was greater than in 1938. This was no mean achievement. But our recovery was hampered by a shortage of labor and of many raw materials, and of feeding stuffs for agriculture, by the world's shortage of food. Throughout this period, we had to try to keep a balance between providing the things which our own people needed so much and exporting as great a volume of goods as we could in order to pay for our imports. This progress was set back at the turn of the year by the insufficiency of coal and electrical power. The non-neglect of the coal industry and our inability to produce new electrical plant during the war resulted in these industries being unable to cope with the heavier demand resulting from full employment and the increased domestic demand. This was made worse by the very severe winter, which also hit industry and agriculture. But there were other and more serious adverse factors. The world's scarcity of food, resulting from the ravages of war and bad harvests in many parts of the world, increased the growing demand on the resources of the American continent. Prices began to rise. This meant that we had to spend more of our borrowed dollars on everything we needed from there. We also had to pay with dollars the food for our late enemies in Germany, in our zone. The recovery of trade and industry in Europe went forward far more slowly than had been hoped. The destruction had been more widespread, the disruption greater. Delay in making the post-war settlement involved as an expense for troops overseas. Other countries besides ourselves found themselves short of dollars, and this increased the drain on our resources. In the last 2 months, our supply of dollars has been running out at a rate which would exhaust the American Canadian loans before the end of the year. We should then be driven back on our last reserves. We have therefore to face now, before we have recovered from the effects of the war, and before our long-term plans have taken effect, the necessity of relying entirely on our own resources. This is a situation as serious as any that's faced us in our long history. We must therefore act vigorously and drastically. First, we must deal with the immediate problem by reducing our overseas expenditure, even though that involves heavy sacrifices on everyone in the community. You have been told of the reductions that we're making in our imports of food from dollar sources. We shall try to make them up by imports from elsewhere, but some restriction is inevitable. We are cutting down imports of such things as films and tobacco, which are not essential. We're reducing our armed forces abroad and re-examining the whole scale of our armed forces. This is not a thing which can be done by a stroke of the pen. But cuts in expenditure are only a partial and temporary remedy. The essential thing which we have to do, both for the immediate emergency and for our economic future, is to increase production and to concentrate on the things which are absolutely vital. We must increase our home production of food. We must increase our production of coal and steel. We must make our transport fully efficient. We must produce more goods for export. To do this, we must delay providing ourselves with the many things that we should like, in order that the materials and labor may be made available for the things we must have. Just as in the war, we had to devote our energies to producing guns, airplanes, and other weapons, and had to stop making other things, so today we must concentrate on what we need to win victory on the economic battlefield. I know that the carrying out of this plan will mean hardships for all of us. The government has been under constant pressure from all sides to provide more clothes, more furniture, more consumer goods of every kind, and to put in hand all kinds of desirable improvements. We have not been able to do all we could have wished with the resources at our disposal. Now we shall have to postpone the supply of these things still longer. The broad plan has been laid down by the government, but to carry it out will demand a united effort by the whole nation. You cannot expect all the details at once. They will have to be worked out, industry by industry, as the plan develops. What does this mean to all of us as individuals? Clearly, it means the willing acceptance of sacrifices for the common good, we're resolved there should be, as far as possible, equality of sacrifice. It's not fair to expect one section of the nation to suffer while others do not, for some to work harder while others take no share, or for some to make losses while others make larger gains. I believe that nearly all will willingly put their shoulders to the wheel, but there may be some who will not. It's for this reason that the government have introduced a bill which, while it gives no greater powers than were given to the present government in 1945, enables them to be applied to the present crisis. The government is determined that nothing shall stand in the way of our recovery. I want every individual to accept willingly what the emergency calls for him or her to do, and also to think out what additional contribution can be made. We shall need longer hours of work from some, change of jobs for many, harder work for all. We shall need a readiness to learn new techniques, to make adaptations. Others will be asked to look again at established trade practices, which may in these new circumstances hold up production. Others may be asked to postpone claims for higher wages or changes of conditions, however desirable they may be in themselves. I'm sure that all wage earners will realize that our difficulties do not arise from fear of unemployment and overproduction, but because we are not producing enough. It's only by production we can make wage rates effective. Equally, we shall need still greater efficiency in management and willingness to cooperate with the workers and joint production councils so that all may work together as a team. Those who direct industry must be prepared to switch from more profitable work to that which is essential. They too will, I believe, realize that the national interest must come first. To do this, we require a national effort comparable to that which we developed during the war. I know how great a burden has been and is being borne by the women in our homes. It would not be human if they did not grumble a bit. But I'm sure that they'll continue to show the patience and cheerful acceptance of difficulties as they have done in the past. The nation will need, just as it did in the war, the work of women on the land and in industry if we are to raise our production. There's the need for all of us as citizens to make as little demand on the national resources as possible, to avoid waste, and to add whatever we can to the nation's wealth. I have tried to set before you the facts of the situation, because I know that if you are told the facts and what must be done, you will respond. The way out of our difficulty is hard, but there's no alternative. We cannot rest upon the help which our fellow members of the Commonwealth have been and are giving us so generously. And even though plans may be put forward by our friends in America to help to bring back prosperity to Europe, we must stand on our own feet. We must regain our economic freedom and get into a position in which we pay for all we need by our own exertions. People of this country have always risen to their greatest height when the peril was greatest. The harder the trial, the stronger has been their courage and determination. I cannot tell you how soon we shall emerge into easier times. That will depend partly on the world situation, but mainly on our own exertions. But I am certain of victory. Our natural resources in this country, the skill and industry of our people, when fully utilized, are great enough to ensure this. Our reward for our sufferings and exertions will be the re-establishment of our country on a sure basis and the preservation of the British way of life. That way of life has spiritual values which far transcend in importance its material basis. To gain this reward, we need hard work, but we also need faith and vision. Faith in our democratic way of life and in the moral values by which we live. Faith in freedom and social justice. Faith in the contribution which we have to make to the progress of the world, and faith in ourselves. We need to have vision also. Vision to see beyond our present trials. A Britain free and prosperous, member of a great Commonwealth of free nations, taking its part in a world society of peaceful and happy people.
The Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Clement R. Attlee, was speaking on the economic situation. His broadcast was heard by listeners to our home, General Overseas,
this is the BBC's,
African and North American services, and on the sound wave of television.
This is the BBC's North American service. We join listeners now to the light program in this country for the Richard Tauber program.